Welcome to Coach on the Rise, the podcast for all coaches of all sports. This podcast is a True North Sports production with the simple purpose of building a community of coaches who want to learn together, grow together, and support each other. If you'd like to learn more about True North Sports, please look for our info in today's show notes. Thank you for joining us, and now on to our show.
Hey there. Welcome to episode 5. I'm Teresa Beckman, your host for the episode, and it's so great to be with you. In the main conversation of today's episode, we have quite the guest. It's Coach Mary Wise. So Coach Wise has been the head volleyball coach at the University of Florida for 27 years, and her Gators actually just finished this past season as the national champion runners-up. In fact, Mary Wise is one of the most successful coaches of all time in NCAA volleyball history. She is the only one to ever have even appeared as a head coach in the Final Four. But more than that, she's also an incredible mentor and role model for thousands and thousands of young coaches and student athletes, including myself. So I am beyond humbled and honored and excited to be able to even appear by voice in this episode. And we have a really fun treat for you, as two of her current senior student athletes are going to be the ones to introduce her a little bit later in the show. But before we get into the main conversation, I wanted to turn to Phil Sayers. Now, Phil is the associate head basketball coach at Grand Valley State University. He's also a graduate of the ASEP program that was for assistant coaches, ran through True North Sports. And he was a big part of the first annual Camp Elevate that, if you remember, was held on the campus of Grand Valley State University. So let's get right into that conversation with Phil and myself, just about what it's like and why Camp Elevate should be such a huge part of your professional development.
Could you just talk a little bit about the experience and why you love it so much?
Absolutely. And it was an awesome thing to help host it and run it and have coaches from across the country of all sports and all genders, you know, come to Allendale, Michigan and realize what a great group of people there was involved with it. And, you know, to me, watching Camp Elevate last year, kind of from more of the behind the scenes, making sure all the rooms were ready and everything was set up and ready to go. It was amazing just to see the heart that people have to reach young people. And I think it gets so often overlooked right now in our world of athletics, when winning is at such a high focus of everybody's mind, and absolutely it's important. But I think we lose track of what really affects that. And yeah, it's X's and O's that matters without a doubt. But what I think Camp Elevate really does is puts you at a spot mentally, spiritually, socially, where you can absolutely be the best for your student athletes. And I think even more for your staff. And whether that means you're a head coach, or an assistant coach or a grad assistant coach, to me, it's been the most eye-opening thing is how to learn from other people and how they work together as a staff to then go back to the staff that I get to work with and be the best for them. And it's been amazing to see, and everything I've ever done with Celia, it's been a pot of gold, no matter what it was, to 4 years ago, I guess 3 years ago, out in Denver, for the first ASIP convention, to the second one out there, when I went back out there just to be immersed in all of her knowledge. And it's just, if you go to a Celia Slater event, you walk away inspired, you walk away changed, and you walk away ready to reach people. And I expect nothing less than that again this year at the end of May.
What would you say to people, to other coaches who, you know, they're big and tough and they hear spirituality and they hear heart and they hear connection and they sort of, you know, subliminally roll their eyes. What would, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What do you say, or what do you say to those people when you're talking about why this is so important, why it makes you a better staff member, why it makes you a better coach for your players? What do you say to those people?
Well, I think that the, you know, haters going to hate, Tree, you know, they're going to hate. And so you have to get past that. And I think what I've really learned through this process, and I think I came into True North Sports at probably a really kind of, I don't want to say a low time, but a time where I was searching in what it meant to be a better coach. And, that's a whole nother story how that whole happened. But, I think just by embracing one word, and that word is vulnerability, you realize how much better you can be for everyone involved in your life. And I think that we get so wrapped up in egos at times that our way is the best way. And this player is the best player because I found this kid. And so that means that he or she's a better recruit than a fellow staff member. And if we would just get rid of all of our agendas and say, what's best for program A, then we'll start to see success move in the right direction. If it's about your own personal gain and your own personal agenda saying, well, that All-American in 3 years, yeah, I recruited him or her. Well, that's not really the whole focus on what we're doing. And if that's what we're truly doing, if that's your whole reason for coaching is to say that you recruited a kid or you developed a kid on the court, on the field, then I'm going to challenge that person to find a new job. And that might come across really arrogant and kind of bold, but I just think we're missing the boat with that. And so what I find is that now by being vulnerable, I might have to step back and give in to what a fellow coach might think is the best for our program. Even if I don't, it wasn't my idea, who cares? And that doesn't really matter. And so how do we best serve these student athletes? At times it's telling my players, hey, I was wrong. Yeah, I yelled at you about this during a game, or I changed to this offense or this defense, or I went to this play, I went to this person, and I shouldn't have. And I've gotten better now because of that. And to have that ownership where it goes both ways in programs, or it's okay to say that I struggle with a lack of confidence at times when I'm preparing for a certain opponent, or maybe I struggle with anxiety when it comes to playing on the road. Well, if you can express that to your team and to your staff in a proper way, by not feeling like you have everything put together and everything is perfect, it's amazing what comes out of it from their end as well. And now there's that connection made where, oh wow, the person that we thought, because we've grown up playing for coaches who feel they know it all and they're never wrong and they never make a mistake, to I now play for people who admit that they are growing, that they are changing, that they are evolving. It makes a great connection and a wide open point of conversation to say, if you mess up and make a mistake, we're going to grow together now. And I've just seen radical changes in our program, embracing that vulnerability and that honesty of sometimes I suck and that's okay.
If you had to, I'm going to kind of put you on the spot here. If you had to sum up how you felt in a word or a phrase, on the last day of Camp Elevate at Grand Valley State University, besides tired, because you are a huge part of putting it together, what would you say is the general feeling that, just the general feeling of the group?
Wow.
Yeah.
Emotionally drained, yet mentally recharged. Because Celia pulls at your heart for 4 days, 7 days, 3 freaking years. And now, and then she gives you reasons to feel that way. And then she gives you reasons to say, all right, let's grab this son of a gun by the throat and go win and go dominate society and go change what you're doing. And so you feel like, oh man, oh. I took all this in. I was, man, the connection time with fellow coaches, to what the speakers are saying, to just enjoying creation and being outside and all that. And you feel, man, I'm, but then you also, at the same time, you're just jacked up, ready to get back and make changes. The only thing I don't like about Camp Elevate and when ASIP has been in the past is that it's May and I have to wait until September 1st to get back to my players.
That's a great point.
I wish it was like August 27th to 29th and I land in Grand Rapids Airport and I roll into our first team meet on August 30th and I'm just blazing. So if we can make that change just for the basketball coaches of the world, let's do it, you know? And yet at the same time, I just call Celia and then I get the same vibe again. Then I go into that first team meeting and I feel good and ready to roll. So, but yes, I think it's emotionally drained, but mentally, just stimulated and recharged.
Oh, that's amazing. Hey, you know, listen, I told you earlier, I have a lot of trouble articulating, you know, just what you just put in a great word. So we thank you very much for your time and for your great words. I know Celia appreciates you just to the moon and back. So we will, we'll see you in Colorado Springs at the end of May, right, Phil?
Absolutely. I will be there without a doubt, booking the flight this week and excited to, leave the campground tree with the family on Monday night and head to the airport and go and be recharged.
So I've said it before, and I said it there in that little clip. The hardest part about Camp Elevate is finding words to articulate just how great it is to your colleagues. But I think Phil did a pretty great job there. So there's actually more from that conversation that we're going to revisit in our next episode. But just to remind you, Camp Elevate will be held on the campus of University of Colorado at Colorado Springs, May 29th through the 31st. And don't forget, if you're an alumni of the first Camp Elevate or any of the True North sports programming, Coach on the Rise Academy, or the ASIP program, you get a special rate. So for more information on Camp Elevate, visit the website, www.truenorthsports.net. And listen, if you're a young assistant out there and you're thinking there's just no way I can afford the travel and admission for a program like this, I have to tell you, there's a payment plan option available to help you spread the cost out. And there are ways to help you fund this investment in yourself. In fact, we have alumni who have actually started GoFundMe pages to raise money. So there are always ways. And as you heard Phil talk about, it's so, so worth it. And with that, it's now my great honor to bring to you the show's main conversation between Celia and Coach Mary Wise. And to do that, we're actually going to do a really special introduction. Celia had a chance to sit down with two of Coach Wise's senior student athletes from this past team. They had an amazing season. So let's go ahead and get right into that.
Hello, coaches. So here I have this unique opportunity to meet with Carly Snyder and Ramat Alasan, both All-Americans from Mary Wise's University of Florida volleyball team that competed in the national championship game this year. And I thought it would be kind of fun to let them help me introduce their coach, Hall of Famer, pioneering Coach Mary Wise. So welcome, Ramat. Welcome, Carly. So tell me a little bit about words that might come to mind or some feelings that you might have about Mary Wise as a coach and as a person.
The first word I think of is competitive. She definitely loves to win, and it drives us all a lot.
The first word I think of is empowering. She empowers her players to be confident and to be able to go out into the real world.
I would say empathetic. She really cares about what's going on in our personal lives as well as our lives in the gym.
She's also very encouraging of people taking their own path and making their own choices.
I'd say a trailblazer for women in athletics all across the country, no matter what sport. She definitely does a lot for them.
She's also very strong-willed of not being stopped by anyone or anything, especially in a world dominated with men.
Mary has such a great sense of humor, so I would actually say funny, because I don't think you can coach this long without having a pretty good sense of humor.
Very true, very true.
She's also very caring. She goes out of her way to check up on us, kind of like just seeing how we're doing and making sure that we're okay.
The passion she brings to everything she does, whether it is in the gym coaching us or making sure that we are getting to class on time. She's such a passionate person and really cares about everything she does.
So when you guys look back on your freshman year to now, how would you say you've become a better person by being a part of this program?
I feel like I just know that my voice holds weight. It's when you get here, it's almost like a little intimidating at times. You're might be a little nervous to speak up in the gym. You might be a little nervous to participate and like in even in class. But being around Mary, she's someone who really believes in you. Like before you truly believe in yourself, like she sets hurdles and slowly it gets higher and higher. She doesn't just shoot the hurdle up there and expect you to bound over it. She really does slowly raise the bar, and then eventually you leave here feeling really confident, really empowered, and really capable. And I think that that's awesome.
Yeah, going off that, you know, just kind of life lessons that I've learned here. It wasn't only just volleyball related. I got to learn a lot of things that helped me now outside of volleyball, which is kind of the best part of the program. The best thing I think about Mary, that she's not only preparing you for what's in your sport, because you're not going to have your sport for the rest of your life, but she's preparing you for what helps you later on in life.
That's great. So when you think about, you know, because you really can't pay people back all the time, mm-hmm. what kind of things would you like to do to pay it forward?
I think staying involved in some sort of field where I was working with women, just because I can see how cool it is when someone comes back that they played for Mary 15 years ago and they bring their little girl or boy into the gym to point at their picture on the wall. And I think that must be like the proudest moment for Mary. They obviously don't have to come back. They don't have to show their kids where they played volleyball, but they really want to. It's like almost like this woman has had such a huge impact on my life. And so I think even being able to impact a fraction of the amount of women Mary's been able to would be paying it back to her in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely paying it back to her would be one of the hardest things. I think she's changed my life for the better, for sure. In order to kind of somewhere try and pay her back, I think it'd just be, again, like carrying on her messages, like her legacy and the things that she's taught us, and be finding a way to do that in the world, like in the smallest ways. If it's going out and volunteering, if it's, because she's very big into that, if it's playing volleyball for as long as I can and teaching people the things that she's taught me in the gym, you know, just those kind of small things and carrying it forward.
One of the big things Mary and I talked about in this interview was being a female role model and the lack of women in coaching. How important was that to you all? I mean, maybe you didn't recognize it as a freshman, maybe you did, but now, like, kind of looking back and reflecting on your career with her, how important was it to have a strong female role model for you? Was that important for you?
It was something that was very important to me, just knowing that it is a sport that is dominated by men. Like, I think just coaching in general tends to be dominated by male coaches. So knowing that going in, I think it was a big deal for me, for sure. Just knowing that, being able to look up to a woman, because I grew up with, like, my mom being the biggest presence in my life. So it was kind of, like, just transferred over to going to college, and it meant a lot. Like, being able to play in that national championship match, I was playing for my team. I was playing to be there, but I was also playing for Mary, playing for a female head coach, and just wanted her to be the first head coach to win a national championship. And mm-hmm. I think that eventually, like, it's going to happen here mm-hmm. at UF.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It was huge for me to come and play for a female head coach, a lot because my mom is a female head coach, and she's been coaching for around the same amount of time Mary has, since we were really young. And I know how hard it was when she's a college tennis coach, and I know how hard it was when she had, like, a babysitter at our games, because my dad might not have been able to make it, and my mom had to, like, drive really early in the morning with all three kids in the backseat of the car. And then during the match, she's, like, looking over, making sure we're okay, and just having to carry the weight of being a mother and balancing your team and being competitive and successful and trying to balance it all out. I have so much respect for women who stay in coaching, especially my mom, especially Mary. You have kids, and you started doing it when no one was looking at, no one was putting you on a pedestal and glorifying what you did. You just had to, like, quietly do it. And so I have so much respect for the amount of passion it takes to stay in this profession for mm-hmm. that long.
Mm-hmm. When you all were playing in a national championship match, and there was a lot of buildup out in the periphery, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know you guys were trying to stay away from the media as much as possible, like all the social media articles and everything, but there was a lot out there about Mary being a mom, being a coach, a female coach, how no women have won a national championship. When you all went into that match, was it a motivator for you, or was it a heaviness for you to feel like you're helping carry that you really wanted to elevate Mary to a place? So was it a motivator for you to win, or was it more of a, did you feel like it was a little bit of a burden?
Definitely a motivator. I think just as well, being a female as well, you know, it's like, I want to do this, like, for us. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like, we're part of this one category. It's like, all right, like, we're going to do this. Like, it's one of those things that, like, it absolutely motivated me. Like, I was mm-hmm. excited to do it. I wanted to do it. And never looking at it as a burden. I think if you look at things as a burden, like, you kind of ruin the experience mm-hmm. for you. And mm-hmm. looking at it as a motivator, it's like, all right, cool, like, mm-hmm. let's do this.
Awesome.
I 100% agree. I think it's the type of people you have who are playing in a national championship match. That's not something that would make us nervous. It's something that would really make us kind of band together. And we did try to stay away from too much media, and they did ask a lot of questions about it in the media, but I don't think I truly felt the heaviness of it until afterwards when we were all in the locker room and I was thinking about like how badly I truly wanted to win that match. And that was kind of the moment that it did hit me. I was like, the sport of volleyball needs this to happen. It's a female, like a women's sport in the NCAA women's right. sport. Like, I felt like the heaviness of it for almost everyone in the sport, because I think a lot of people really were behind that. Mm-hmm.
So you all are in a kind of a transition point of your life, you know, you're moving on to something different. And I'm curious how that feels to you. And I know there's probably a lot of different feelings going on for you. Can you say a little bit about how you're feeling and maybe share with people what is next for you?
It's definitely different. The time constraints are, you know, it's different now. Like, I have a lot more live class that I'm going to. So it's like, okay, you have class. And I lifted, you know, with Carly and CK actually every single morning at 7 a.m. instead. So we've been lifting in the mornings, and then it's kind of like, okay, I'm in class. And then it's kind of like, all right, well, that's it. You know, you have time to pick up extra things, hobbies if you want to, work if you need to, like CK's coaching, which is amazing, you know, being able to do that. And so it's a change for sure, not being able to go into the gym and play volleyball all the time. But I will be continuing my career. I am playing professionally. I do not know where I'm going yet. I'm waiting for my agent to get back to me on kind of options and contracts and things like that. But I will be continuing my profession, and I want to play in the Olympics. So that is kind of my end goal right now. And we'll see where I end up.
Well, that's great. Well, good luck with all of that, Ramon.
Thank you.
I feel I'm transitioning pretty smoothly for maybe like a day or two when I just feel like, oh my God, like I can't believe I'm not going into an individual, or, you know, you are hanging out with girls on the team and they're all laughing about something that happened in weights or practice and you're just not a part of it. But I think also it really helps that I feel extremely satisfied with my 4 years. So I think this transition period is a little easier because, like Ramat said, it has been time for me to take up a random hobby or dedicate some more time to things that I never necessarily got to. I took up slacklining. It's like tightrope walking, kind of, and I got 5 steps recently. So
wow,
it's really tough to balance. Thank you.
Oh, that's not something I would try. I'll tell you that.
As far as next for me, I will not be a professional slackliner. I am thinking that is so obvious right now. I am thinking I am going to. Well, actually, I know for a fact that I am going to continue playing volleyball professionally overseas as well, and I do not know where I'm going. But I know that it is going to be probably the experience of a lifetime. And I'm really excited. I'll have a friend overseas in Ramat, Shina, yeah. and Alex.
Yeah, there's a lot. That was so great to see that picture of Shina and yeah. Alex together. Yeah. That was pretty cool.
Shina's killing it.
So in closing, just if you think about your younger self, your freshman year, mm-hmm. What advice would you give that freshman now, looking back on your career, coming into this program and into this experience?
I'd say my biggest thing was learn to fail earlier in my career.
Learn to what? I'm sorry?
Learn to fail earlier.
Fail earlier.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, because I was very big into taking it one step at a time, like one day at a time. So even this year, like with all the hype of being in the championship, it was like, take a breath, like one day at a time, you know. So I don't regret a single thing that's happened in the last 4 years, like the ups and the downs. And I am so happy that I came to Florida, and I would, if I had the chance to do it all over again, I would do the exact same thing, the exact same way, because I think that as a person, as a player, that I've grown because of it. So,
mm-hmm. Great. Yeah.
The way that I've learned and have grown here, I hope that, I can only hope that for every 4 years of my life, I see something like this. Like, I see myself come in as like this kind of nervous freshman with like a really kind of eccentric way of life, and realizing that you can do anything and be yourself. I think for a little while it was like, okay, I have to, I don't I don't know, I need to get more organized, or I need to do this, or I need to be a certain type of way. But it was kind of like, you're exactly where you're supposed to be, and this is all for you. So I think that helped me in my nerves in the national championship match. I was like, 18,000 people, but like, you should be here. Like, everything in your life fell the way it should for you to be in this moment. Like, 6 a.m. weights, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. Like, own this moment. And don't be thinking about home, or like, I'm from Michigan. There's no point in not being right where I am with these people and making the connections I'm making, because what are you gonna do, pay for a $500 flight home from Gainesville Airport? Like, that's expensive. You can't go home right now. So like, own this moment, like, own yourself, because you can do anything if you just like embrace the unique qualities that you were given and embrace the moment that you're in. Like, those, that combination of two things, I think has made my time here so incredible. And I wish maybe my freshman year I would have spent a little less time thinking about being homesick.
Yeah, that's a very good. So good be place. Where you are.
Be where you are.
Be in the moment, mm-hmm. Right? Well, I really appreciate you all taking some time to talk to me about Mary and about your experience here in the University of Florida program.
Right? I'm Carly Snyder.
I'm Rama Al-Hassan.
And we hope you enjoy the podcast with our coach, Mary Wise.
Well, here I am having the opportunity to visit with Mary Wise, the head volleyball coach at the University of Florida. And as many people would say, Mary is pretty much a volleyball pioneer and a volleyball legend. Like, you know, and I know she's already grimacing at me with this whole concept of legend. But Mary, thank you so much for taking time with me to visit with you about your amazing career this morning. I really do appreciate it.
You bet, Celia.
So, one of my favorite things about moving here to Gainesville 5 years ago, I would say, is I just have really enjoyed the opportunity to get to know you better, just on a personal note, but also just to interact with your team, your staff, who I truly love your staff, with Dave Booz and Shannon Wells, and really have enjoyed to get to know quite a few of your athletes as well, and the culture that you have, that I really love interacting with your team. So just, you know, kudos to you that, you know, you build a really nice culture and a nice energy around you in your program.
I appreciate that. But Celia, I will say also how lucky we are that you're in Gainesville and we have you as a resource. Mm. And I think coaches understand that sometimes a different voice can be so powerful. Mm. And one of the themes that we took with us this year was that each of us possess their own superpower, and the players embraced it. You brought us that, mm-hmm. and we ran with it, mm-hmm. but you were the one who introduced that theory to the players.
Yeah, well, thank you, and thank you to the Wonder Woman movie coming out.
Yeah, did. Perfect timing.
It was definitely perfect timing. I loved that movie. So Mary, because this is a podcast for coaches of all sports and all levels, and not all coaches in the other sports are as familiar with your path to get here to Florida. Do you mind just sharing a little bit about where you played and then how you kind of got into this coaching profession real quick?
Sure. I'll try and keep it as brief as possible. I was fortunate enough to play at Purdue University for a terrific coach named Carol Dewey. And I owe so much of... when I went to college, there was 5 in my family in college, and so it was going to be in-state or nothing. And fortunately, it was right when Purdue was offering scholarships. So go to Purdue, great career, played for this terrific mentor, and she was the one who helped me. I mean, how crazy is this that I was offered and accepted the Iowa State head coaching position? I was 21. I mean, you would never do that now. So obviously, just telling you how long ago that was.
Yeah, that's something you and Becky have in common. She was 21 as a head coach too, right out of college.
Crazy.
That is crazy.
But that was, you know, where our profession was at that time, and Iowa State was looking for somebody who had played at a high level, and they certainly took a risk, you know, to hire somebody with zero coaching experience. But I will say that the mentoring that Carol Dewey provided for me at least gave me a chance. Did I make mistakes? Sure. And they're great stories, and I still keep in touch with those Iowa State players, and it's fun to share those stories. But it was, I did turn 22 before that first match. I always like to say that. But that experience was invaluable, where a part-time assistant, I had to do everything, and I'm learning it all for the first time. So from Purdue, or I went to Iowa State,
a change in my personal life where I was getting married and thought I would be working in or going to school at the University of South Florida, where Mark was assistant basketball coach. Got married, and 2 months later, he took his first head job, which was at a small school in South Central rural Kentucky. Change of plans. Mm-hmm. So now I am 1 year. It was only a year since 1981 that I haven't been coaching. Was that summer, that fall after we got married in 1985. And so living in Kentucky, but how fortunate I was, got on the staff at UK working for Kathy DeBoer, now our executive director of the American Volleyball Coaches Association. Just want to talk about landing on my feet. So we spent 5 years working with Kathy, and it was during that time that the Florida job came open, and I came here in 19, fortunately enough. Again, Florida had some very experienced, very successful coaches that they interviewed, two other males, but they extended the offer, and I didn't even wait. The true story, I didn't even ask the salary. I just said yes. And that's a funny backstory, because during that first conversation, I was, when she called, I was giving my son a bath, and the phone rings. You know, this is before cell phones, and I'm like, I cannot miss that phone call. So I pick him up out of the bath, put a towel on him, put him on the couch, do that terrible parenting thing, put the video, there was this thing called VCRs back then, put the videotape in. And I could see him, and I'm talking to interview, and he's sitting on the couch without a diaper, which I later paid for, but I got the job. So, all true story.
That's awesome. That's a great story. I've not heard that story about you and your time interviewing here at Florida. And you know, it's like really unusual to have a female coach be at a place for one place for as long as you've been here. And you know, interestingly enough, you know, you and Becky, I mean, you've been here... how many years? 26. Mm-hmm. Becky's been here 23 years. So I feel like it's really unusual when you look around the country to see women staying at a place for that long. So what do you think that's about?
Is it because women, I mean, what I look at least from a volleyball lens, is that women staying at the same place for a long time, is it mainly because any coach staying at a place, you're lucky because you're not being fired. Mm-hmm. I don't think women move along the career path like men do, mm-hmm. Meaning changing jobs. So if you're at a school that long, the best news is you haven't been fired.
True.
But I don't know. It'd be interesting, and you would know this better than I, do women stay in positions longer than men at the same school?
Yeah, I don't know, but I do know, I don't know the statistics on that, but I do know that one of the biggest complaints that I had heard from athletic directors at my time with the Alliance of Women Coaches was that women they had a hard time getting women to move for jobs. And I think that's really an interesting difference, because I just think women build a village where they live, and they're the village builders, and when they go to another place, you know, I've heard so many women coaches say, I wish I had a wife, you know, that would rebuild everything for me, you know, when I went. And, you know, some of them do have wives, but beyond that, I think it's kind of like, that's a huge part. And I've almost felt like it's something that maybe some of the male athletic directors should look at. And how can you help women recreate that village quickly? As far as you being at Florida for as long as you've been at Florida, I know many people have asked you about raising a family and the children aspect. But as we know, you know, women build the village. They're the village builders in their families typically. And so I think part of the reason we don't see as many women moving around for jobs, I'm just curious on your take on this, is because of the village aspect and having help building that village.
100% agree. The decision between maybe going up the career path and if you do that, it totally blows up your village. Sometimes we just have to make a decision that the balance in our life and having all that you work so hard, because building the village doesn't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. Those are relationships. And the people who help you get through the day, help you raise your kids, in so many aspects that you put so much time into that, it's balancing that. And so I do see it's real. females are not going to just drop it because that number for a salary on a piece of paper looks so good. It just doesn't happen that way.
Yeah, you know, I really do feel like over the years that there is two different ways in recruiting coaches. You know, recruiting, you know, women coaches sometimes takes a little different strategy, you know, a little bit more effort.
And be a little creative. Mm-hmm. How about, you know, one of the things that Jeremy Foley does, and he does this, the longtime, very ultra successful AD here at Florida, and did it just not just with the male coaches, but the females as well, is that he had his list, and it was an ongoing list, every sport. He's watching this in people who came into Florida and played us, and he's watching from afar. So he's got his list of potential candidates. Even in this, in our case, we haven't had fortunately, a volleyball change in over 25 years, but it still has a list. But he finds when it's time to make a change, he goes to them. Doesn't wait to see who applies. Doesn't bring them on campus. He goes to their campus, meets with them in their most comfortable spot in that moment to be able to spend time to get to know them as people. But to your point about being creative, yeah, because it just, they're different parameters that will help a female be successful. And so much of it is they have kids. What schools will those children go to? What if they're younger than that? What preschool? What daycare is available? Who are the other people maybe in the department or outside the department who could help them navigate through that? Because when you go to a new job and you're starting and building the recruiting bonds and figuring out just the minutiae of the job, that is a 24/7 job. And there's no way you can be great at it until you've got your family, your kids, your spouse, and all of that is taken care of. And I think now as an AD, I would blow it up in terms of the standard way of how you reach out and hire folks.
Yeah, you know, and I think that one of the biggest things that I know you agree on is the quality. If you feel peace of mind around daycare, I mean, that's really big, you know? Like, you can come here and be focused on your job. You're not worried. You know, you don't have this worry in the background.
To that point, I've always maintained that you can't be where you are. Meaning, we always tell our players, be where your feet are. Well, you can't do that if you're worried about your children. And until that piece is taken care of, then you can be great at your job. But Celia, I also talk about is that you want to, for female coaches, moms, to be good at it, when they're at their job, they have to be at their job. And got to be all in. And you can't be all in if you're worried, if even a piece of you is worried about your child's raising. You know, is that a babysitter, is it a daycare, and who's, and all of those decision making. Because let's be real, it's the women who are figuring that out.
No, for sure. And I have always said, like, if I was an athletics director, one of the things that I would try to do is find a way to collaborate with different groups on campus to have a really great childcare. Can you imagine, like, how that would be a game changer for so many coaches, male and female,
for sure,
who could go down to the daycare during the day and see their kid have lunch or, you know, whatever. But to me, it could potentially be a fundraiser for the athletics department. It could be something that generates some revenue. It could, and there's every school that has a daycare has a waiting list 5 miles long. So, you know, when a coach shows up, you know, you really have to have an in or a way to get your kid in there. And isn't that a message to university presidents and athletics directors that this daycare thing, I think coaches are more than willing to just have it taken out of their paycheck and pay for their daycare if their kids are getting taken care of, like you're saying.
Absolutely. You could, it would be such a tremendous recruiting tool for any university thinking outside the box.
You're right.
If we do this and we do a really good job, hey, how about the fact that how many schools have an education department, child development, and you bring those folks in, and that it truly, that was Baby Gators. It was run by the College of Education here at UF, and that's why the waiting list was years long. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, when we took the job, and I expressed to the athletic director, and it was in a phone call conversation. He asked, how you doing? And I told him, I said, if I could just, and I think my exact words were like, if I could just figure out the daycare. Mm-hmm. And he asked, and he, with no kids, asked, what does that mean? And what I was doing is I was driving around at noon hour. I had somebody watching that, but I was driving around because Mark hadn't moved down here yet. And I'm looking at the different daycares and trying to figure it out. And I didn't have anybody to ask. That's one of the things you do. Bring the resources. Bring other women who are raising kids to you. And who could I ask? I don't know who to ask. I don't know anybody. I'm here in Gainesville. Mm-hmm. My husband's away, but I needed to bring Matt with me. I needed it. The first weekend I came down by myself, but after that I couldn't, it would just be too hard. It was hard to have him with me, but it was hard to have him apart. And when the athletic director asked me, what would that mean? And I said, well, you've got a really good preschool here at Florida, but I think the waiting list is over 5 years long. And it's only for 3 to 5 year olds. And that's why people would put the names on the list the day they were born. And he was able to get us in.
Wow.
Like that next week.
Wow.
And what a difference maker that was for me.
Absolutely. And I think, too, the other little small piece of that is at the time when you were coming here to become a head coach, I'm sure women were a little sensitive to being a mom and having the perception that it was going to affect them in their job. So you probably didn't want to complain to your athletics director, you know, and say, I'm struggling with this, because then he's going to go, oh, did I make a mistake hiring a woman with children? You know,
so true. And trying to have that, I got this taken care of. You know, I had it taken care of when I had the village built.
Mm-hmm.
We got it going. And obviously mm-hmm. I'm so blessed to my spouse, who's 100% involved in the child rearing and support of the career. But I didn't want to complain. And I think, you know, we're all about pendulum shifts. So we went that, I got this, I'm not going to complain about it, I'm not going to ask for anything there. And then we shift over to, you know, I'll watch women take their infants out recruiting, and I think, oh, I feel for you. I get why you want to do it, but it's so much harder to be great at your job when you do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that line, when you're at your job, be at your job. Mm-hmm. But when you're home, be home. And back then, it was easier because there wasn't the cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was home, the recruiting was you were allowed one phone call a week. And so I would try and get as many of those done on Sunday and Monday night. And I can still picture where in the office in the house, and our youngest would sit outside the door. It was a glass door so he could see me, and he would just sit there. And in between phone calls, he and I could reconnect, and then I'd go back in. And it was... as soon as I was done, I was done. And then I could be all about the family. I think that's a whole lot harder now because of that cell phone.
I really do agree with you. And it came up last night when I was at the state, the game event that Linda Teeler runs for all the female athletes here, you know, trying to recruit the women athletes. I know you've been a part of that program. Fantastic program that Linda does for the female athletes here. And it came up about the, first of all, one of the comments I made at our table with the athletes was that, you know, picking the right partner is probably the most important decision you'll make if you want to be a coach. Like if you don't have the right person, you don't Amen. Have the right partner, then it is just not going to happen for you, you know? So one of the things that Kathy DeBoer mentioned about you is why she feels like you've been so successful over your career is because of that ability that you've had to compartmentalize. And when you're doing something, you're doing it. Like, you are committed. Like, she said that there's been a couple times that she's come up to you at a recruiting event and you're trying to watch a match and you're like going, Kathy, I got to watch this match. I'm working. Can we get together later and at lunch? I'll talk to you all you want. But
so
I'm working,
true.
You know?
That's so true. I think that strength can become a weakness. I think your time has become a weakness. Mm. I can be so focused. I'm oblivious to what's going around. I think it helped in childbearing, though. there are certain... I think compartmentalizing has really helped me through a lot of things. It helped me when my husband was diagnosed with a really bad form of cancer, throat cancer, and had to work through that at the same time coaching. And how, if I could just put these things in a box, I can deal with them, but I can't deal when it's all piling on at one time.
Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting because I feel like the more I talk to high-level coaches, the more they seem to have this ability to compartmentalize. Like, but they're giving 100%. When they're in that compartment, they are present and they are in the moment like you're describing yourself. You know, that's really interesting to me.
I think probably where I'm at the weakest of that is when I'm with the players, I think I work real hard to do that with the staff. With my children. But you had said earlier about the importance of picking the right partner. That's an area where I can continue to get better. And so we have date nights, you know, once a week where we try, and it's that dang phone. I can get rid of the phone so I can be present. And for us, for Mark and I, it's get away from the house, because otherwise I'll start cleaning. And as he's a basketball analyst, he'll start watching basketball. So we get out of the house and connect person to person. I think that's compartmentalizing, as long as it's not to the detriment of relationships.
Mm-hmm. And the other part that I've heard from some people about what they think is another quality that's helped you stay in the career as long as you have, has been your ability to pick your battles. Like, you don't go marching into your AD's office every single day, but when they see you come in, they know it's important. So, like, you know, like, let's just, you know, chartering flights, you know, like, you, that's really important for University of Florida coaches, because of the travel is difficult for your teams here, you know. So I just think that's a really interesting, do you agree with that? Like, when you battle, you're going to battle, but you pick them really.
I do believe that it's probably the best advice I was given, and I try to pass that on, is choose your battles wisely. And you have to be smart enough to know that there are certain battles that are worth fighting, and it's important. You are the spokesperson for that program. You are the mouthpiece for those players. And what you're fighting for, if it affects their experience in a negative way, you got to fight that. Mm-hmm. If it prevents you from being successful, you have to fight that. So, and not even Florida, it's not an open checkbook. They have it, you've got all these programs, and you have to choose your battles wisely and fight the battles that are worth fighting. And if it's not winnable, don't go there. Don't spend mm-hmm. your energy there. It's just not worth it. Mm-hmm. And then you're right. So then hopefully what will happen is when you do come forward with an ask, like, use as opposed to a battle, use the term an ask, that it's received as, hey, it's not, we're not overwhelming them with, we need this, this, and this. It's, this is important. Have a rationalization for it, and a legit expectation that it may not happen immediately. So what I try and do with Linda Teeler, who is our direct supervisor for volleyball, is talk to her whenever we meet. I talk to her about the next step. The next thing I want to talk to you about down the road. And so she has sort of like this, it doesn't come on like it's this
big surprise. Right, it's right. Big, you know.
Mm-hmm. So we're saying one of the things was to get more, like an example, more hours for our student helper in the office. And so I talked to her about that, is that I'm going to be, next year I'd like to talk to you about expanding those hours. And then we have a discussion. I think you have to be realistic, choose your battles wisely, and don't fight the battles that aren't winnable.
Mm-hmm. And only really try to deal with what you have control over.
Amen, boy. It's what we tell our players, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes our coach, we have to coach ourselves mm-hmm. as well as we coach our players.
Mm-hmm. So Mary, you coming off, you know, an amazing season, you know, culminating with competing in the national championship match against Nebraska. And congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
What a great year. And one of the things that I noticed with watching you all, you know, as I say, I have such a vested interest in your team, and is like this, what could feel like to me, this weight of being the first female or one of the few females that's even competed in the national championship match, which blows my mind anyway, right?
Isn't that crazy?
But like, just, there were a lot of articles, a lot of interviews. I watched them, I read them, and so in my mind, I'm thinking, wow, you know, that could be heavy. Like, in one aspect, it could inspire you and push you and motivate you, and on the other side, it could be heavy to feel like you're carrying the weight of a gender on your shoulders. And quite frankly, I was thinking about when I went to watch The Battle of the Sexes, the movie about Billie Jean King, and because I so admire her strength of walking into that stadium to play Bobby Riggs. Millions of people, my whole family, we were watching mm-hmm. in front of the television when she was playing Bobby Riggs. And just thinking about millions of people around the world were watching on television. It was packed, sold out crowd. And what she must have felt walking in there carrying an entire gender on her shoulders. And I know that I'm not trying to over-sensationalize it.
But, right. Hers was a little bit bigger deal.
Hers was a pretty big deal. Yeah. And I'm really sad that more female athletes don't know her story and her mm-hmm. impact on equality, not just in tennis, but in women's sports right. in general. But those stories continue in the world of coaching within the individual sports, and yours is one of those stories. How do you feel about that? Do you feel that?
You know, so back to what we talked about earlier about compartmentalizing. Mm-hmm. In the preparation for the matches throughout the NCAA tournament, including the national championship, I never let that enter. I never let those thoughts of carrying the burden of an entire gender on your shoulders as you're trying to coach. And honestly, I didn't. But could it have magnified the disappointment in losing? Yeah, if I'm real, I will tell you, I felt so bad after the loss, obviously, you know, for the players, because it ends the season. We walked out of that locker room. That group will never be together again. Right. And I almost wanted to keep them there as long as possible for that reason.
It was a great group, great team, great chemistry.
Seniors,
yeah, just a great group of seniors.
The younger players, they were just so bought in. So for that group, for the alums, you know, we had so many former Gators that made the trek to Kansas City. And these are, you know, the moms who are in some of these families who don't have the money, and they came with their families and their parents, and they're there. And I wanted so badly for them, but also for the women coaches, because the reality, what we see is, and I would guess it's true in other sports, if a female coach fails, part of it will be blamed on her gender. When a male coach fails, you never see that. Mm-hmm. Or at least I don't from afar. Mm-hmm. And so for women to be able to, for women to win a national championship in our sport, to be able to say, yeah, you give a female the right resources, and that's what it is. Why aren't there more men, why aren't there more women who have won national championships in the sport of volleyball? Well, the reality is there's not all that many sports that are funded at such to get the top talent that are coached by women. Most of them are coached by men. So just by the odds, chances are it's mm-hmm. going to be a male win the national championship. So to your question, the weight, it did not help getting over the loss. I will tell you that. But it did give me the moment, whether, you know, would you be talking to me now? It gave me the mouthpiece to say, you know, one of the best things that came out of it was an interview between the matches, the semifinals and the finals. They were asked, like you asked earlier, what did Florida do to help support women? And I wasn't prepared. I mean, I didn't know that question was coming. But I mentioned, how about athletic trainers? You want to talk about a really tough profession. Try being a female mom and athletic trainer, where the hours are never yours to decide. And they're there long before practice starts and long afterwards, and that is really, really hard. And that soundbite went viral. And I thought to myself, man, if I had known that, I had so much more to say. I did. I wanted to say, look, folks, you hire a mom, they get more stuff done before 8 a.m. than most of your employees do an entire day. Stick with them, because it's going to be hard for a few years, but you stick with them, these will be your best employees. And not just coaches, but any women working around our country, is you, if you just think outside the box, give them the resources, women get stuff done. Mm-hmm. And I thought later, like, oh man, if I had known this, I had so much more to say. And I feel so strongly in that. And do not demonize a female, the entire gender, if a female fails. And I would also look back and go, why did she fail? Because I tell you what, any AD that loses a female coach because she got out, well, because it was just too difficult, I would say to the AD, what did you do? What did you do to keep her? And put part of the responsibility has to fall on that athletics director.
Mm-hmm. I really do agree with you, Mary. Amen, a woman, sister. One of the statistics I shared with all the student athletes last night in my opening comments was that they, in the Forbes 100 most powerful women in the world that they do every year, like 65% of those women played sports at some level, and they attribute a lot of their success to their sport experience. So what you're saying is, it's true. Women will get it done.
Yeah.
And also another study that was done over 21,000 companies around the world, they found that the companies that had 30% or more women in their leadership positions were 6% more profitable than the other companies that did not have women in leadership positions. And so I think what we're finding is just the different things that women bring. And my hope is that by working with male and female coaches, and there's a lot of work to be done, because I think there's the statistic is that 80% of athletic director jobs are still held by men, and mainly white men, so that we need work with minority women, minority ADs. But I think that we have a lot of work to do in changing some of these unconscious bias that exist. And how do we get people to realize that, because I find that, what to your point, that when a woman gets fired, most of them will get out of the profession because it was such a difficult situation for them and they felt unsupported or what, you know, on and on. But I just feel like there is this extra work that women feel they do just to get that respect. It's like, I feel like men get that respect easier, you know, just kind of automatically because they're a male coach.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever felt that.
Sure.
Instant credibility, right?
Sure.
Right.
You know, Celia, I've had fathers, I can remember this when I was young, and in a recruiting visit where the father said, "Do you really think you could do as good a job as a man?" And I was so blown away. If he had said, "Do you think you could do as good a job as this male, this coach who has 20 more years experience?" That's legit.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, and he said it right in front of his daughter. I thought, you got to be kidding me. Mm-hmm. I was young, but I wasn't so young to realize that's a really biased question.
Mm-hmm.
And I do know that. I do know that for some families, they just see that for whatever reason, the male's going to be more competent.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some absolutely fantastic, terrific coaches in our profession that are male. But you know what? There's some really dang good female coaches as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I feel like one of the most glaring statistics for me in the coaching world is how men right now have about 60% of the coaching jobs on the women's side for all sports. But on the men's side, women only hold less than 4% of the jobs on the men's side. And so there's this, it kind of feels like this, it's okay for men to coach women, but it's not okay for women to coach men. And if you don't believe me, just look at the statistics. And yes, it's much more competitive because men have been playing a lot longer, but I don't see the athletic directors, male or female, looking and adding women's names to those lists of jobs that might come open in sports that are, like, even in the sport of softball, it's okay for a male who played baseball to coach mm-hmm. softball, but we don't see as many female softball players moving into the baseball side of it.
We do not.
Mm-hmm.
I do have fantasy, though. I want to ride this job as long as possible, then I want to go coach men.
Now, awesome.
You know, it's interesting. Volleyball, what's unique about it is the better jobs are in the women's side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of former male players that would have loved to have coached men, but they're just not as many jobs.
Right.
They don't pay as well. I mean, it's a better profession career-wise to coach women than men. But wouldn't that be, I just think I would love to do that, to be one,
mm-hmm.
to be one that worked with both genders.
Exactly. And I just feel like the male athletes, I think women have a lot to offer in their development. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's not just men who can teach them how to become a man. I think women have such an impact. You have two sons.
Sure.
I mean, for God's sake.
I'd like to think it has
had a good impact in teaching them how to become a really healthy man, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just feel like that's part of what we're against, I think, is this belief that only men can teach men how to become men. And I feel like that's just really a miss, because this generation in particular that wants that connection, you know, they want to connect with their coaches. They need that. I'm not gonna say the word nurturing, but I mean in a way of getting to know them and building a relationship
Absolutely.
With them, you know, and kick them in the butt when they need
Sure.
it, but also give them a hug when they need it.
gift. And you know? You'll be a better coach from building those relationships. Your program will benefit from it. And most importantly, the athletes will benefit from it. Mm-hmm. Because before, as that line, I love that quote about they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And once you build the relationship of respect and caring, then you can push them outside their comfort zone, which is what coaching is, to get them uncomfortable. It's the only way to get them better. And if they trust you and they know you believe in them to make it as positive an experience and they have the buy-in, it's going to get a little messy along the way, meaning they're going to fail before they get better. But you get that buy-in and they continue to grow, the relationships built, they last a lifetime. Mm-hmm. It's one of the best parts of the job. Mm-hmm. It's not just the players in your program. It's the relationships you get to have with them when they're done. I love that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you certainly have a lot of players that you've stayed in contact with. I mean, your alumni, your relationships and your alumni involvement is just really fantastic. And it is definitely an advantage of somebody who's stayed at a program
True.
For a long time.
Yes.
But still, you know, you've worked hard at it and you've kept in touch with those relationships, which, you know, that's really fantastic.
I want every player, even if they played before I came here, you know, there was a lot of Florida volleyball before I got here, even though I have been here a long time, mm-hmm. but I want them to feel welcome when they come back. And when they come back, I want it to be about them. So our alumni event, we don't get to do it all that often. We put it in February because mm-hmm. we have so many former players in coaching, and we knew that to do it in the fall around a volleyball match, it just wasn't going
to
work.
Which, by the way, just I wanted to say, that's another really incredible thing is that you've mentored so many young women into coaching. So thank you for doing that.
Well, it's really, I think when we step back, when it's all said and done, there may not be a plaque for it, but in my heart, I will know that will be one of my greatest contributions. It wasn't the wins and the losses.
Mm-hmm.
It was helping women. They must have enjoyed the experience enough to want to go into coaching. And then hopefully it has the ripple effect. Yeah. That's and that cool. They will mentor women that will choose to go into coaching. Because
mm-hmm.
truly, is there a better job?
No, seriously. It's a really pretty awesome job. It really is. I mean, and it is a very high time commitment. But I find that women in corporate America have a very high time commitment. It's, I don't know where you go that you're not going to work hard at what you love. You know?
Absolutely.
If you really want to be successful. But I do think there's other, you have to recharge too. You know, mm-hmm. In our programs, we talk a lot about Jonathan Fields has 3 buckets in his Good Life project book, How to Live a Good Life. And one's vitality, contribution, and connection. And we're modeling Camp Elevate after those 3 buckets this year. So we're going to start the morning with a hike with the coaches in the Garden of the Gods in Colorado. But what do you do, Mary, like to recharge and do? I know you're a runner, so
yeah,
it's becoming
more of a plotter these days. But I still am committed, roll out of bed and get on the pavement and
mm-hmm.
and just start the day that way. I like to read, and I'm in a book club that I cherish and love, a once a month book club of women who have nothing to do with athletics. Some of them wouldn't even know a volleyball from a basketball. And I love that. When I'm with them, I am not a volleyball coach. And that truly, that is how I try to live my life, is that when I go home, I try to turn off the volleyball coach. If you walked into my home sale, there are no trophies, there are no plaques, you wouldn't know. I didn't want to have a shrine to Mary Wise in my home.
Mm-hmm.
That just wasn't, I wanted to be Mary the wife, Mary the mom at home. And so that's how I found the balance.
Another compartment.
There you go.
Your
once
house
again.
Is that compartment.
That's right.
You know, whatever. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is, you know, I don't think anyone stays in any career for a long period of time without really being committed to their own growth, you know, and becoming a better coach. And one of the things that takes is a level of vulnerability, you know, and to really kind of look at what you need to improve on. And I'll, you know, this, and I mean this as the highest compliment. Like, I've been, you know, living in Gainesville for 5 years now, I believe, and I've gone to every year watching you coach and watching you in the national tournament, and I feel like you've just over the years have just kind of evolved more and more, because you're an emotional coach, And that's one of the things I love about you. Like, you're into it. You are fired up, and your players love that about you. I mean, I've heard them say you can always count on seeing Mary, you know, over there with that little Mary Wise fist pump. You know, but they love it. They really love that energy. But I also know, in studying emotional intelligence and that self-regulation, that that's something that so many of the coaches I'm working with are trying to work with too, because, but I've really admired watching you in those big game moments, you know, evolve into this place where you're really, you know, doing that, but, you know, control in that supportive way and that calm, right. Being more calm in those and tough knowing moments.
It's being the barometer to what the players need. It's really easy to fist pump and be excited when they're doing well, but that's not when they need your emotional energy. Mm-hmm. Where they need it and is when we're struggling. We're down a set, we're down 8-4 in the fifth. Whatever it is that they feel your belief in them and confidence in them, that's when you have to be a complete giver. When you're rolling and it's good, they don't need that. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn it. I was a player. I tried to, you know, no coaching experience. So I rode the roller coaster that players do. And once I learned, and the coach I played for was much quieter very, very calm. And I tried to be that early on in my career, like one match. And it just wasn't in me.
Wasn't you.
No. And so to be authentic. Mm-hmm. But to understand, what do your players need? And I think the worst thing I could do is when we're struggling, and I've seen this in my colleagues, is the team is struggling, is that to physically even remove yourself, sitting back further in the bench, not making eye contact, like you're almost disowning them. No, this is your team. This is your family. This is when they need you the most. And it's instilling confidence. One of the former players who's now coaching said, and I only by accident did I hear her say it, but I thought, wow, if she felt that, then we're doing something right. She said that I always had a higher confidence in her than she had in herself. And if I could continue to do that, to help them raise the expectations of themselves. Some of the great ones, they don't need that. But that's not true of all. And I think it's not being calculating, because then that's disingenuous. To be authentic, but understand, what do they need? You know, that's what moms do. Mm-hmm. You may be having a bad day, but if that little one needs you more, you turn it off. And you just learn how to do that. It becomes second nature.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. So if you had to look at your growth over the years as a coach, what areas do you think you have grown the most? You know, in that piece, what we just talked about, I'm sure. But what else? Well, how else do you feel like you've grown?
I think a much better understanding of my weaknesses, and then hiring to those weaknesses. Mm-hmm. I was so lucky. For 16 years, I worked with a terrific guy, Nick Sharonis, who's coaching at a community college here in town. And we were so unbelievably different. But I worked with him by accident, meaning he just kind of fell in our lap when we hired mm-hmm. a second assistant years ago. And we had a really good, it was like a dance, you know, I'm the high energy extrovert and he's the grinder introvert. Mm-hmm. But when he left, and raising a young one, how about a male, raising mm-hmm. a young one and didn't want the grind, I didn't at that time do a really good job understanding what are my weaknesses and can I hire to those weaknesses? Well, that's what we have now in our assistants, and Dave Booz and Shannon Wells, ultra, uber talented, both fully capable of being a head coach. And the AD who hires them at those two different schools is going to reap those benefits 100 times over. But their strengths are my weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And understanding that, and then letting them, giving them the autonomy and encourage them, let them be them, because and put my ego aside. Mm-hmm. If we're better that in this drill at this moment, working off and Shannon has the loudest voice in the gym, that's okay. Mm-hmm. And the players need to see that. Or if it's we're working on team defense and Dave has the loudest voice in the gym at that time, that the egos aside, this makes us a better team. So mm-hmm. how have I evolved? understanding. There's a lot of stuff I'm not very good at. So go find those people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Mary, whenever your time comes where you decide, you know, you want to step away and maybe go coach men's volleyball, what advice would you give the next person who would follow you here? Because, you know, I think there's a real trick to following what some people would consider a legend, a Hall of Fame coach. You know, what advice would you give that person?
Well, honestly, I hope it's one of those two who would follow. I think you have to walk that line of be you, but also recognize and embrace the past. I think if you draw a line and only go towards the future, the people that came before, and I'm talking about the athletes, they built this program. And so keep them in the family. I think that'd be really important. And then I'd say, be authentic. Mm-hmm. Be you. And you is someone who can always grow and get better. Every year we start with how we're going to make the team better. And you got to put that mirror. I'm speaking here to the woman who has created a profession in doing that. You know to what I speak.
Yeah.
How do you get better?
Because I personally believe you get better. That most coaches don't struggle with, you know, the next coach following you. It's really not going to be about their X's and O's. It's going to be 150% probably more about the people skills aspect of making that transition, the emotional intelligence of, you know, like you're saying, connecting your past and the history of this program and honoring that while building on it.
Right.
You know,
right.
Moving forward. So, but that, you know, I do see a lot of coaches make that mistake. And yeah. Come in and want nothing to do with the former coach. And that's like, which I don't ever see Florida being willing to hire somebody like that anyway. So let's look at you younger.
Oh.
And if you look back on yourself as a 21-year-old head coach, knowing what you know now.
Right.
What advice would you give yourself?
You know, so I was so young, I didn't know what I didn't know, that mm-hmm. piece. But how fortunate I was to be mentored by such a great coach, but even a better person in Carol Dewey, because who she was in terms of her values and her character, that she was my mentor. So I knew it's about treating people well, mm-hmm. and it's about communication skills. And during that early time, I'm 21, I'm trying so hard to be that mature coach, and I kept such a distance from the players that I felt I needed to do that because I didn't want them to think that I'm their age. And I'm thinking, Mary, who are you kidding? You're their age. But I wouldn't have been so removed emotionally. But that comes with confidence, mm-hmm. which comes from experience.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it's so much easier now. It's so much easier
right.
now.
Right.
If I'm dealing with a problem child, as I call, you know, or troubled moments with a player, I can use experience. So when I get that look, you know, that look of a player who isn't quite bought in, I can use, look, I've been doing this for a long time. And I don't try to throw that in, but I could say, when we've been in this situation before, what I know of players that have gone through something similar, so they don't, not to preach at them, but to go, you're not alone. We've been through this, and we can help you out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Experience, there is no substitute.
You can't substitute it. There's no doubt about it.
No.
Well, let's shift gears here a little bit and just talk in closing a little bit about your two sons. You're a grandmother now.
I am.
And you are just loving being a grandmother. It's all over your face.
You're
so happy.
People
know.
Tell me, but boy, until you're in that moment, it's awesome.
Yeah, it really.
Yeah.
And, you know, your son, Matt, is a director of operations for the Wyoming men's basketball program, correct?
Yes. And in that role, director of player development,
as
men's basketball has that role.
Okay.
And so he's doing everything but recruits. And this is his fourth year with the program. It works for a terrific coach in Alan Edwards, who played at Kentucky and was on staff at Wyoming as an assistant before getting the head job. And Matt, at a real young age, is getting a ton of responsibilities. Then our youngest is on the staff here with Mike White in men's basketball as a video coordinator.
And that's Mitchell.
That's Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
And so I still joke, I would say as they were growing up, fellas, anything but coaching. And when I'd have one of those really long, bad recruiting days, I'd go, fellas, anything but coaching. And what are they doing? coaching.
Yeah, awesome.
It sure makes, you know, I will tell you, it makes it fun dinner table stories. Sometimes I kind of feel in the back seat because as my husband Mark is a color analyst for ESPN for men's basketball, there's a whole lot of X and O talking, and I just have to sit back and nod my head like I know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. But what I enjoy most is the phone calls that I'll get from Matt or Mitchell, and especially Matt because of his role. Mitchell, I hopefully in time, as his role expands beyond video coordinating, is that Matt will call about the personnel decisions, mm-hmm. and motivating, and just to what you speak, the X and O is pretty important, but it's so much more than that. The X and O is such a small piece. If you don't understand how to build trust with your players, how to create the buy-in, to have a functional family, the communication skills, all the X's and O's in the world aren't going to work. Mm-hmm. So what I love is having those conversations mm-hmm. with my kids.
Yeah, that's fantastic, because I do find that most of the time coaches just need somebody to talk through those situations and process them. Mm-hmm. And I wish more coaches had those people in their lives so they don't make these reactive decisions in these conflicts that they find themselves in, which could really, really haunt them for a long time, you know, making those really quick decisions.
For sure. Celia, I would be remiss if I didn't say the person who was that confidant for me, my rock, that's my husband, Mark, who was a basketball coach, mm-hmm. and gave up his career so we could come here to Florida. Mm-hmm. He was coaching basketball, but he's the one that I could bounce ideas off of and talk through things and get his input from an objective point of view.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not in your partner, it's not in your staff, you got to find somebody. I love what Becky Burley has created here at Florida with the collaborative meetings that we have with the other head coaches.
Mm-hmm. That's just really fantastic.
It is. And it's almost like we're in there about an hour and you can feel no one wants to leave,
mm-hmm.
because you get to sharing. Yes, our sports are different. I kind of enjoy listening to the unique aspects of the sports, but coaching is coaching and directing a program and sitting in the chair. And to that end, Celia, after the last match, and so grateful of all the people who reached out to us and congratulated us on the win, the wins to get there. But I can't tell you how powerful the messages from our fellow Florida coaches meant after the loss, because they knew what that felt like,
mm-hmm.
how hard it is to get there. It's from Tim Walton, who's won multiple softball national championships, or Roland Thornquist, our women's tennis coach, or Becky Burley, who's won a national championship in soccer. These are coaches who've been at the highest level and also have lost at the highest level, and they know how it feels. And for my coaching brethren here to reach out to me, I can't tell you what great support that was.
That is really amazing. I find myself wondering why more schools don't bring the head coaches don't come together in that kind of a way to collaborate and share ideas and support one another. I do say that the coaching community here is very tight, and the head coaches, and you know, we're running the assistant coach program, which I really have enjoyed that as well. But I just think it's really unique that Florida invests in that for you all.
I think you have to make that happen, because we all get in our box,
mm-hmm.
and we're so tunnel vision.
Yeah.
When we're coaching in our own sport, you have to have the connector.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to do that? And I almost sense that if it comes from an administrator, it's not as effective.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, it's Becky Burley. She's our social chairman.
Yeah,
has been for years.
She's the mayor.
Yes, she is. The connector. And she's the one. And she is so wonderful about sharing ideas. Becky's the one who will walk by my office and pop her head and go, "Mary, hey, I want to tell you about this. We're trying this." Because she just wants to share.
Mm-hmm.
And if you build that, later this week, I'm going to have coffee with our men's golf coach. Now, there's two different sports, volleyball, mm-hmm. men's golf. And so that we can share ideas together.
JC, what a great young coach, man. He's
fabulous.
JC's really, really something too, yeah.
So have a connector. And mm-hmm. if you don't have one, be one.
Yeah. That's really, really great advice. So we're going to get Matt and Mitchell to come to Camp Elevate. And now that I found you might be out there at camp, it might be out in Wyoming visiting your granddaughter.
We're going to make it happen.
You might be coming down and spending some time with our coaches at Camp Elevate.
You'll have me out there.
And you can bring your granddaughter.
I would love
What's her name?
Addison. We call her Addie.
Very nice.
Addie Wise.
Well, I just would like to say, Mary, thank you so much, first of all, for your time today, but also just everything you've done for the sport of volleyball, for women's athletics overall, and the coaching profession overall, and being such a wonderful role model for male and female athletes in the world of athletics. So
thank you, Celia.
Really do appreciate it.
Hi, Teresa again. And I just have to say, if you are a coach or anyone who is interested in coaching, that was a conversation that you could get so many things from, just tapping into, you know, just the thoughts in the, and to hear those two, both of them legends, in my opinion, just kind of go back and forth on a variety of topics. I want to thank Celia Slater and Coach Mary Wise for the wonderful edits and shout outs that you all won't hear, but I did and enjoyed thoroughly. So thanks for that. And to everyone else, we want to thank you so much for listening in today. If this podcast has added value to your day at all, we just ask that you do two things. Share it with a friend in the coaching world, and if you're so inclined, just go ahead and subscribe to the podcast. It's on iTunes or Google Play. The more people we can add to this awesome tribe, the better it is for everyone. And as you head out to your day, just a quick reminder to find out more information on Camp Elevate, go to truenorthsports.net. And if you go /camp-elevate-2018, as in 2018, you can get all the information you need to join us in Colorado Springs, Colorado in late May. You can also find us on Facebook by searching True North Sports. Thanks so much.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope you will subscribe to Coach on the Rise so you don't miss a single episode. Also, we would be so grateful if you could take a minute to post a quick review of our podcast. Your review really helps us get the word out and grow our tribe so we can reach more coaches. Until next time, keep shining bright.